and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tennellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax. This episode is brought to you by HarperCollins Australia. Listeners, it's impossible not to be excited about interviewing an author whose career I've been fortunate to witness from its infancy. From the first interview I conducted with this author more than 5 years ago until now, this woman's skill as a storyteller has simply gone from strength to strength. With 4 best-selling books under her belt now, Tanya Blanchard has become an international best-selling author and a powerhouse in the historical fiction space. I'm thrilled to have the chance to speak with Tanya again today ahead of the release of her brand new novel, A Woman of Courage, published by HarperCollins Australia. Welcome back to the podcast, Tanya.
Thanks so much for having me, Claudine.
It's such a pleasure. Tanya, as I mentioned, it's been just over 5 years since we last chatted, and so much has happened for you in the intervening period. Is a book a year author what you hoped for when you decided you wanted to pursue your dream of being published?
I guess I didn't really have too many expectations in the very beginning. I really just started off with wanting to tell my grandmother's story with the girl from Munich. And it's kind of rolled on from there. I've been really fortunate to be able to have the opportunity to tell my stories to my readers. As you know, they're mainly family stories. Each of my novels is based on a family story. I love being able to share those stories with readers. And I've got lots more up my sleeve.
That's exciting to hear. So Tanya, what do you think the best thing about being a published author is?
Well, that's a really good question, Claudine. I think the best thing about being a published author is the fact that you've got support from a publishing house. The other thing is that I'm able to share my stories, like I mentioned already, and my stories are out there in the world because I'm published. And having that security to know that I'm able to continue to tell my stories is really important too. Being published has allowed me to develop this fantastic readership. It's really special to be able to correspond with them and hear how much my books have resonated with them. I feel so honoured when people get in touch with me and tell me their stories and their family stories. So it's very special and it's a real sense of community. So I think that's the best thing.
Yeah, fantastic. I love it. Now, Tanya, I have already mentioned to you how much I enjoyed this book. Not only was it beautifully written, but so rich with details of the world in which Hannah lived, the social, economic, and political conditions. It's a world away from the periods in which your other books were written. So I guess I was intrigued by your inspiration for writing this story. Can you tell us how you came to write it?
All my novels are, as I mentioned, inspired by family stories. And this time I decided to turn to my husband's family stories. I first heard the story of the pub that the Blanchards own and ran in Durham in Northern England on the cusp of the 20th century from my father-in-law. And this was many years ago. So I think we were sitting at their place in the kitchen. He had brewed a big pot of tea in his tin teapot and he was just telling me his wonderful stories. He heard the story about the pub from his grandfather who came to Australia in 1914. His parents actually ran the pub, Robert and Eleanor. So I was really fascinated to learn more about Eleanor as a wife of a publican, what her life might have been like. But unfortunately, my father-in-law didn't know very much about her at all. And so I turned to putting my husband's family tree together and researching more about his family on the Ancestry website. And I found this amazing census document in 1891 where Eleanor was on the document, and she was stated on there as being a schoolteacher and living at the same pub with her parents. So it got me wondering, how did she go from being a schoolteacher to a publican or working in the pub with her husband, and how did her parents begin with the pub as well? So that started the process of writing this story.
Yeah, I love it. Before we go too far into describing your research for this book, for the benefit of those who haven't read it yet, can you tell us more about the story?
Yeah. So the story is set in the 1890s in Northern England. So it's the late Victorian period. Hannah is a young suffragist who is straight out of teacher's college, and she joins her parents in the small agricultural village of Everfield, where her father's just bought a public house, which is a pub called the Ox and Plough. So teaching's her vocation, and she's full of passion as she works to help women and children in the community. But she then discovers that her fight to help bring the vote to women becomes her greatest passion and her life's work. And so there's this story throughout the novel about the fight for the vote for women set against the backdrop of the local village, parliamentary halls in London, and of course she's involved with the national suffrage movement. The crux of the story is that Hannah struggles to bring the modern world to the village and with its conservative attitudes and resistance to change. And her idealistic dreams of changing the world are really challenged by the reality that men make all the rules, and that as a woman in this time, that she's bound to her place through social expectation and duty, and has to face the same difficulties that all women face, that she's just like every other woman. So the tension rises through the village as men become fearful of losing control when the women actually speak up about their needs. And Hannah finds that power is threatened, and the dark underbelly of what's hidden behind closed doors is actually revealed. There's brutality and closely guarded secrets bubbling just beneath the surface. The consequences of this set off a chain of reactions and events that escalate into a showdown between those fighting for the recognition of women's rights and her right to determine her fate, and those who want to silence women's voices. And this reverberates from the village all the way to the House of Commons in London.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. I can't tell you how much I really loved this story. So Hannah effectively was based on your father-in-law's great-grandmother, Eleanor. Is that correct?
Yes, you're right. Yes, my husband's great-great-grandmother, my father-in-law's great-grandmother. You're right. Yes.
Indeed, indeed. So, yeah, I was trying to work it out in my head as well.
It's a bit confusing, actually, sometimes.
Oh, I love it. So, Tanya, how did you go about fleshing out Hannah's character? What kind of research did you do to try and imagine not only her life, but the kinds of challenges a woman like her faced at the time?
Well, it was actually quite a fascinating journey, really. The main thing that I wanted to look at was what was a woman's life like at the time as a publican's wife? And what kind of challenges did she face? It was obviously a very small village, very traditional. She'd come from teacher's college. She had a great education. She'd come across groups like the Fabian Society, which was a socialist movement. And also they were quite free-thinking people. And she had a lot to do with the women's suffrage movement as well, through rallies and talks. So she would have had a lot to do with them in Durham, where she went to teacher's college as well. So that's really informed the basis of Hannah's character. And also, I suppose, she would have really struggled against the patriarchy and traditional values. But she also was living in a pub. And I was thinking about her character when I thought about my father-in-law and his family. They're all really down to earth, can talk to anyone, really personable. And I thought, I bet you Eleanor, and therefore Hannah, would have been quite similar as well. So I put that kind of charismatic character into Hannah, and she's a perfect person to be involved in the national suffrage movement.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Tanya. I think her ability to be able to relate to different people on different levels was her absolute character strength in this novel. She was able to move between different social circles, people with different socioeconomic backgrounds to her. You know, obviously her experience as a teacher helped her understand the living conditions of many in her village. So I felt that you gave her the perfect background to be able to understand, you know, the different kinds of conditions families faced, and women in particular.
Yeah, that's right. It was an interesting period of time, actually, because the generation before, and even, say, the grandmothers of this generation, they were what were called angels of the house. And they were women that were basically stayed at home. They lived a domestic life, running the household, raising children, and basically listening to whatever their husbands and the men folks said they should do. But this was changing, especially in the 1890s, when there was the rise of what was called the new women, who were educated. They had greater leisure activities. Most women could read by this time because they'd all gone to school. They were bicycle riding. They were active. active, and they were vocal and expected the new freedoms that were surrounding them. There was the dress reform, so they had freedoms in dress, in leisure activities, progressive thought, and they really wanted to say have a more of a say about how the world was run. So this fit in perfectly with the whole conflict of Hannah's character, and research, you know, shows that this happened exactly at this time.
Look, I have to confess that I found reading about the suffragist movement in this book and Hannah's experience of it utterly fascinating. You know, the gaining of groundswell of opinion and desire for change, the women who took up the fight, the obvious and insidious opposition to giving women a say in their own lives, the setbacks and continued courage of the women who led the way. And I think it's hard for us to imagine now how difficult life was for women at that time, but I think you've done an incredible job of showcasing this from different perspectives. So I wanted to ask you, Tanya, how easy or hard was it for you to flesh out the different characters in this book? And was there anything in particular that helped you to do this?
It actually wasn't very hard to flesh out the characters at all, because there was so much diversity at the time. And when we had the very conservative characters, the powerful men in the village, they would have been the ones that were involved on the council. They would have been the large landowners. So certainly we have characters based on that kind of framework. They were obviously very much against any change in the village. They wanted to keep control. But then what I really loved writing about was Hannah's character and Hannah's friends that were also involved in the suffrage movement, especially Esther and Clementine. Clementine is a fellow school teacher. She also is very much into the suffrage movement. She's all about change. She's all about making life better for those around her. She's a bit more go get them than Hannah is at the beginning. When she's straight down the line, she says it as it is. And I loved writing Clementine's character. And then on the other hand, we had Esther, who is a lot shyer. She hasn't been faced with the suffrage movement before. And it was really wonderful to develop her character as well, from this shy girl who comes from a rural background. She's from landed gentry, so she's well off and doesn't have a lot of difficulty as such compared to the working class women. But, you know, certainly she loves technology. She loves science and engineering, and she becomes an inventor. So I loved writing her character as well. So there's lots of diversity in the characters that I could write about. There was such change at this time. There was political reforms, social reforms. There was technological change, scientific and medical change, allowed so much creativity, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the characters in your book was, in fact, a real-life women's activist by the name of Millicent Fawcett. So, Tanya, how did her life and work influence this story?
Well, Millicent Fawcett was a fascinating character, actually, and I knew nothing about her. I'm actually ashamed to say now, until I started researching. She was one of the longest-serving members of the national suffrage movement. She started off in the movement in the 1860s. She was very important in lobbying government and parliament into change for women's laws. She was the voice of logic and moderation when lobbying to government and parliament for the vote for women. She did not sway from her task at all. She was very persistent and determined all the way through the process, with all the different knockbacks that the women's suffrage movement received from government and parliament. The bills that were put forward were usually knocked back or talked out of parliament, as they say, so they didn't really even get a chance to be heard within parliament. And she just kept going. She was really inspiring to me. And once I'd learned about her persistence and determination and what an important person she was in the national suffrage movement, I really had to involve her in my story. And she, of course, becomes Hannah's mentor in A Woman of Courage and helps develop the women, so Hannah and her friends, to be involved in the national suffrage movement, and, you know, is a great way to involve Hannah into parliament and watching the bill being presented on the floor. Yeah, she was a great sort of vehicle as well to help showcase what was happening at the time in parliament.
It really did give so much depth and so much colour to this movement and the effect that it had on not only the campaign in general, but on the lives of the women in Hannah's village. Now, suffragists weren't just concerned about giving women the vote, were they? I mean, they were more concerned about other changes ahead of that, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. They were more involved actually in changes to issues that were important to women. So, I mean, this began with the education laws. They needed to be changed. They were very involved in that sort of thing, making sure that children were able to stay at school, were able to be at school from a young age to the ages of 12, 13, 14. So that was a really big thing. And this improved literacy rates in Britain to over 90% by the late 1800s. So this was a really important thing they were involved in. They were involved in royal commissions into the education process and at the elementary level and also at higher school and university levels, and looked into the qualifications of teachers for higher education as well. They lobbied and were instrumental in changes to the Matrimonial Causes Act, which was about marriage and parenting. So they lobbied for equal access to divorce, the right for a woman to have custody of her children once she was separated from her husband, which was only a fairly recent thing as well. Legal separation actually existed. Women were able to sue for maintenance, and the laws also kept women safer in cases of persistent cruelty by her husband. They were also involved in things like child cruelty and abuse and child welfare laws, raising the age of children protected under the law from about the age of 10 to boys 14 and then girls 16, raising the age of consent as well. And this combat child prostitution, trafficking and exploitation, and also they helped set guidelines for child employment and outlawed begging. I guess a couple of other things that they were also involved in was public health, school meals program. They lobbied for the right for birth control for women as well. A woman was able to choose what was best for her rather than her husband or father telling her what was best for her. So there's some of the things that they were also involved in. So really very instrumental and important in the different things that they worked towards, not just the women's suffrage.
Yeah, incredible work. It really is. And a lot of things that obviously modern women like us take for granted, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Tanya, reading your author note for the book, I was surprised to learn that women in England were quite far behind Australia and New Zealand in their quest for enfranchisement. With what you uncovered in your research, did you form an opinion as to why this was the case?
That's an interesting one. I think it had a lot to do with the fact that in 1882, the property law, the married women's property law, was instrumental in allowing the vote for women to become an actual reality. Before this, women were actually had a joint identity with her husband. She and her husband were one in marriage. She didn't have a separate identity once she was married. So that's legally, economically, in any way at all. So the changes to the Married Women's Property Act in 1882 allowed a woman to go back to having an individual legal identity like she did as a single woman. And this is the first opportunity, really, that women could be on their own and have their single identity so that the vote for women could go ahead.
It's just fascinating to me. Just because a woman was married, it meant that she had to subjugate all of her freedoms and rights to her husband. It just seemed so barbaric in so many ways.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's another thing that I read about Millicent Fawcett. Her purse was stolen and it was actually returned to her husband as property of her husband. So the purse and her earnings and whatever she had in there, her personal belongings, were property of her husband, not belonging to her.
Just outrageous, isn't it?
Crazy.
Thinking about how far women have come from Hannah's time, Tanya, before women were allowed the vote to now, some of the things that you wrote about still struck me as being relevant today. We still live in a predominantly patriarchal society. So I wondered, what do you hope that readers will take away from this story, Tanya?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We still do live in a predominantly patriarchal society. And while researching and writing, I couldn't help but draw parallels to the current times. Women have always lived in societies where they've been disempowered. And now, as much as ever, we're still on that journey as women for equal rights to men. But I think what I'd like readers to take away most from this book is how women like Hannah and her friends dealt with the challenges and opposition that they faced, many which are still the same in this day and age, and they still manage to find joy and hope and love while fighting the injustices and striving to make better lives. I think, you know, they had the same pressures of family and societal expectation on them. There were patriarchal attitudes. And these days, I mean, it sort of translates into things like we have the gender pay gap, the Me Too movement, and the debate around a woman's right to her body. That sort of really does draw those parallels. And although they might have encountered so many difficulties back then with issues like power and control that men had over women and how they faced them actually through their life from the time when they were young girls and children all the way through till them being young single women and then married and then married with children, whether they were working or not working, all of those things had different elements of power and control, which is really fascinating to explore. And, you know, the bottom line is that there's still the darkness behind closed doors, silencing of women's voices with the darker side of power through threat and verbal, physical and sexual abuse, intimidation, and even things where women just feel invisible. So I think these sort of things still happen in this day and age. But the other thing I'd like readers to take away is the fact that these women weren't downtrodden. There was still this lightness of a collective sisterhood of friendship and family relationships that was supportive and sustaining and gave them joy and deeper meaning to their lives. And that's the same thing that still happens today. We still have female relationships that are supportive and sustaining. We're more powerful when we share our experiences and our burdens and speak up about our concerns. And we're a more powerful force when we actually stand together. And I think that's what I'd like people to take away from the story.
Yeah, so very well said, Tanya. Absolutely wonderful. Now, talking about the patriarchy, Hannah's dreams of taking up the suffragette cause and remaining unmarried are challenged in this book, to say the least.
Yeah.
Talk more about this and how your research informed Hannah's character.
It's how she has these challenges. She wants to remain unmarried and taking up the suffrage movement because she wants to be this way because she knows that if she marries and has a family, which are the mainstays of a woman's life, she won't have the time or the inclination, or perhaps her husband wouldn't allow her to be involved in the suffrage movement. So I think this is why she doesn't want to be married, so that she can take up this movement. But of course, those sort of things are challenged in the book, and that's part of the main theme or push in the book, I guess, the lack of control or the issues that women have to deal with, issues about, you know, being married, having family, the right to her body. And at that time, you know, things like I wrote about in the book about girls who had fallen pregnant. I looked at issues around falling pregnant outside of marriage, teenage pregnancy, and what was available to women at that time, especially working class women or women who were poorer. They didn't have independent means, which would enable them to live as an unmarried mother. But of course, all of the societal expectation around that as well, they would have been forced away from their family, from their community. There were those sort of issues that I wanted to look at as well. And certainly through the research, there was a lot of information about pregnancy and a lot of control and restrictions imposed on women at this time, especially through being women, through their womanhood. So I think when I look through the research at, you know, the differences between the Angels of the House and the New Women, and there was such a conflict and such a difference between those two groups of women, that was a perfect way to show the conflict in Hannah's character and how she wanted to remain unmarried and follow up the suffrage cause and be a new woman. And yet there were so many elements that society expected women to be angels in the house still, the domestic goddess essentially, who listened to her husband. But I think at the end of the day, the thing that really spoke to me the most was that these women were actually really courageous to be able to deal with all of these elements of their lives. Their courage really for me came from a balance of finding a way to live a fulfilling and authentic life with all the messiness and navigating life's trials and tribulations along the way. And I think that's kind of a bit of a universal message too, true for women in any time and place.
So true, Tanya. I was just thinking about the kinds of challenges you mentioned that Hannah faced at the time, but I think she also faced challenges within her own family, just, you know, expectations from her parents in particular. She didn't want to let her parents down. So there was just that added element. I mean, she didn't have enough to worry about.
Well, that's right. There were her parents. She stayed at the pub for her parents. She went to the pub for her parents rather than moving to a big city where she could have started her teaching and be, you know, really got boots in and all into the suffrage movement. But she started off in a small agricultural village. And her sisters are also much older than her, and they, you know, sort of, I suppose, mentioned a little bit in the beginning of the story that they kind of pressure her to go with her parents, with their parents to the pub and help them out there. Her sisters are already married and living their own lives, and they feel that, you know, Hannah being unmarried, her duty is to her parents. So there were conflicts and challenges everywhere she looked.
A woman of courage for sure. So was there anything else that you uncovered in your research that really surprised you? There was a thread in the book concerning vaccinations against some of the diseases that we don't hear about anymore, and it just obviously coming out of COVID to hear these kinds of perennial debates was, I thought, very interesting in this book.
Yeah, I was really quite amazed by that and really surprised too. The timing was perfect, I suppose, just coming post-COVID. Smallpox was still a great killer. There were still epidemics of smallpox through the 1800s and even right up to, you know, the turn of the 20th century. I researched all about the vaccination program in Britain, which was a mandatory program for babies and children to be vaccinated against smallpox. And also about how they discovered that the vaccine wasn't really very useful or very efficient after about 10 years and how they needed a booster at that time. So that was something that was actually developed in the 1890s, booster. And at this time, I was really amazed to discover that the anti-vaccination movement really exploded almost. It became a national movement in the 1890s. And the same sort of issues that we have heard about here through COVID with vaccination, the right to vaccinate, whether it's, you know, the right thing to do or not, the same sort of issues they were talking about back then, so many, you know, years ago. I suppose what surprised me is that there was a lot of almost apathy, I suppose, to vaccination. Parents weren't necessarily vaccinating their babies as much as they should have been. And there was a rise in childhood deaths to smallpox in the 1890s as well in places like London, which was a big centre, of course, and the epidemics just kind of exploded in those kind of cities and communities. It just would have been just so much more close to home because infectious diseases were a really big thing still then, and there were epidemics of all sorts of things, not just smallpox, there was typhoid and there would have been diphtheria and cholera. So I found it really interesting to explore the anti-vaccination movement at the time as well.
Yeah, I loved that, Tanya. It's something that I've been quite interested in as well from an Australian perspective. So I loved reading about that.
I did discover also the first global pandemic of influenza occurred just before our story starts in 1889. And it was called the Russian flu because it had originated in Russia. And I found when I was researching about the Russian flu, there'd been some contemporary articles written and parallels drawn between that pandemic in 1889 and the current COVID-19 pandemic. So that was really quite surprising as well, quite fascinating. And, of course, all of the issues that go with public health and sanitation and all of the measures for a pandemic that were available and current then are the same sort of issues that have been discussed now. So it's interesting parallels and interesting how history comes full circle.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Tanya, as mentioned earlier, since The Girl from Munich, you've published 4 more books and found an international audience. So I wanted to ask you, what do you know about yourself as a writer now that you didn't know when your debut was published?
Yeah, a lot. I think now I feel a lot more confidence in myself as a writer, especially with this book, A Woman of Courage. I felt quite relieved to know that with this new setting and with this new era with my husband's stories, that it's actually been well accepted already. And I guess it gives me a degree of self-assurance to continue with my own writing style and perhaps even branch out to other time periods and places in the future. I guess that's one thing. The other thing is, I guess that I'm more able to trust the writing process now than I did back then. I know how the process works for me. I know not to panic when I hit writer's block. I'm not sure what comes next in my story. The Girl from Uni was a story I really knew inside out from my grandmother's stories, and the writing flowed quite easily with that book. But since then, I've added a lot more imagined storylines, and I've been able to learn to trust in that blending of fact with fiction and ensuring that it works in an authentic way and still engages the reader. And that's kind of got a bit easier with each book that I've written as well.
Yeah, love it. Thank you so much for sharing that. As you might know, Tanya, there are many writers who listen to this podcast, and given all of your incredible experiences over the last 5 years, I wondered if you might offer some tips.
Of course, of course. I guess the very number one tip is always to write what you love and what you're passionate about, because that's how you're going to best connect with your reader, because that's going to come straight through the page, you know, if you're passionate about something you write and you know what you love and write about, it's going to come through. Also, write your story right through your first draft of your manuscript before going back and editing, because if you're like me, you'll just keep editing and editing until the cows come home and never get to the very end. So that's a big part, I think. Another thing I would suggest is to write regularly, because it's just like a muscle and needs to be flexed a little bit every day to grow stronger. And I think in this way, I know for me, it's helped my creativity to flow and develop more easily if I write regularly. Another thing would be maybe to write your ideas down as they come to you, maybe with a notebook and pen, or if you're like me, I just chuck them on the notes on my phone or even on the computer. But for any story ideas that I want to develop, I will use paper and pen. There's something about that connection between hand and pen and paper that for me allows that creativity to flow, which is quite different to writing on a computer. And the last thing I would suggest is don't give up. Believe in yourself. If writing is what you love, keep working on it. Improve your craft or find different ways of writing until it feels like right for you. And that's really what happened for me. I really truly believe that everyone has a story to tell and everyone can write about something they love. And the way you write and tell your story is unique to you, and, you know, someone will want to read that.
So what's next for you, Tanya? Are we likely to read more about Hannah and her fight to help women gain the right to vote?
Absolutely. As you may have guessed, A Woman of Courage is about the suffrage movement in its infancy. And so my next book is An Undeniable Voice, which will be out next year, and continues Hannah's story with the rise of the suffragettes, the famous suffragettes that we all know about in Britain. We'll find out what happens with Hannah and the suffragettes. And we look to also to the home front in World War One. And, of course, we follow the fight for the vote for women right through the novel as well. I'm really excited about this one too, because I haven't written about World War One before, only World War Two, and I love the idea about writing about World War One, and there's so much to explore around this area and look at all the changes in the early 20th century as Britain steps into the modern age.
Yeah, fantastic. I can't wait to learn more about that one in due course. Tanya, if listeners wanted to learn more about you and your books, where can they find you?
I'm on my website. If they go to the contact page, I will get back to them as soon as I possibly can. And also you can get me on my social media, so on Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, that's brilliant. Tanya, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you about this eye-opening, compelling read. I highly recommend A Woman of Courage to you listeners out there. Thank you, Tanya, for joining me on Talking Aussie Books today.
Thanks so much, Claudine, for having me. It's been great to talk to you.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading.